You're listening to the Worldwide Freedom Radio Network. This is the Voice of Freedom. You're listening to the Worldwide Freedom Radio Network. You're listening once again to the Hour of the Time. I'm William Cooper. Ladies and gentlemen, remember, next month is October. That's the witching month for financial catastrophe. If you look back through history at the financial dives that the stock market has taken, almost all of them, not all of them, but almost all of them have occurred in the month of October. We know that one of the planks of the Communist Manifesto is to eliminate the middle class, what they call the bourgeoisie. And we also know, ladies and gentlemen, that it's getting close to waltz time, the magical hour when the bell tolls midnight and ushers in the new millennium, which the secret societies and the full body of adepts known as the Illuminati refer to as the Golden Dawn, the New Age, the culmination of the great work, the great plan, the recovery of the lost light, the manifestation of the lost word, etc., etc., etc. So if I were you, I would be prepared for this because it's got to happen here pretty close, pretty quick, pretty soon. Call Southwest International Trading at 1-800-295-2432. That's Southwest International Trading at 1-800-295-2432 and ask how you can get your hands on some real money while you still can, folks. Because once this breaks loose, you're not going to touch it with a 10-foot pole. And the way that they're going to machinate the crash, you're not going to want to anyway. If you haven't done it up to this point, you're still a sheeple. And sheeple will follow the Judas goat. You're not going to be thinking for yourself. You haven't up to now. What makes you think you're going to start tomorrow? You know? But the quicker you start, the better off you're going to be. It's 1-800-295-2432. Do it now. For those of you who listen to Michael Cottingham's Quest for Health on the Worldwide Freedom Radio Network, Michael has a picture and a short biography on our webpage. And if you want to see what Michael looks like and read a little bit about his life, go to http://harvest-trust.org and go to the radio broadcasting and then to the Worldwide Freedom Network, and then where you see Michael's name, click on it and it'll take you right to his page, and you'll get to see what he looks like, read a little bit about his life, and so on and so forth. The web page is getting huge, ladies and gentlemen, and it is extremely complicated, I got to tell you, just keeping up with what pages where. In fact, I'm having to draw a special chart now, and so that I can visualize what it is that I'm doing on there, because we have now so much information and so many links that it is impossible for one person to remember all of it. It is incredible. For tonight's broadcast, The Illuminati Exposed, the entire text of tonight's broadcast can be found in the Secret Society page. Go to Illuminati Exposed, and you will find it there. It was written by a man named R. Shand, and he did a pretty good job. And you're going to hear tonight that I'm not the only one who has researched these people and come up with exactly the same answers. R. Shand had never heard of me before in his life. And he did his own research. He has come up with the same answers. And so I'm going to give you his version of the Illuminati Exposed tonight on the Hour of the Time. And if I were you, I would take notes. We're going to call this another tape in the Lost Light series, because his research is excellent. I can't fault it anywhere. And the small disagreements that I may have with it, I will add or subtract from tonight's broadcast. So if you want to get the entire thing with my comments and research and knowledge added in on this broadcast, then you need to order this tape. And you can go right to the for sale menu, or the for sale page on the website, and you can download whatever tape list you want, bearing in mind that only the 1997 tapes are for sale. If the most recent tapes aren't on the list yet, they will be updated within the next couple of days, right up to date. And so you don't anymore have to send a dollar in a self-addressed stamped envelope. All you have to do is go to the web page, and boop, there it is. It'll tell you, give you instructions. All you do is send an email message to our autoresponder, and you will receive whatever tape list it is that you ordered in your email box within 1 hour. Probably a lot less than that, unless there's a whole bunch of people ordering it. If you haven't explored every link and every page on our website, folks, I strongly urge you to do so. For the moment that you hit our homepage, you're going to start on an adventure, a quest for truth, the likes of which you have never imagined in your wildest dreams, and it is actually possible to stay on our website now for days and never run out of things to do or things to learn. So, get with it. You need it. We all need it. And folks, while I'm building this website, I'm learning more all the time, just as I always do in every endeavor that I engage myself in. Don't go away. I'll be right back with the Illuminati Exposed. You know, folks, before I begin this, I went through the tapes that we've done on the Illuminati, and it's approaching 100 hours now. The first original series, Mystery Babylon, was 41 tapes. And it wasn't until today, you see, I didn't even realize it, because I just do the broadcast and I give Annie the tapes. I didn't even realize it, but the Luxor videotape is number 33 in the series. So somehow this mysteriously works out the way these people have planned it, I guess. And number 33 being a videotape, when the tapes are sent to whoever orders the series, we always get a letter from them or a postcard saying, number 33 was missing. Just like the lost light, the lost word. And it's incredible. You see, there really is something to the way their magical system of numbers works. And I'm not saying it's good or bad. I'm just saying that there's something to it. And I'm not quite sure exactly what that is. But it's there, nonetheless. Those of you who have done the research and have began to peer in to the mysteries behind the veil, you've also written me letters and you've noticed some of the same things happening with you. And so I thought I would just mention that before getting into the meat of tonight's broadcast. I find it amazing that I've done close to 100 hours just on the Illuminati over the years. That's an awful lot. It's a lot of research, ladies and gentlemen. And not all of the research is mine. Most of it is, and I'm the only one that's ever put it all together and educated what they call the profane into the secrets of the order. Tonight, the Illuminati exposed by R. Shand. He doesn't start as early in the history of man as I do in my research and in my expose of these people. However, he starts, and that's what's important. And where he starts, from that point forward, almost everything that he has discovered agrees exactly with the research that I have produced, with just some minor differences. And I think that's just because I've been at it for so many more years than anybody else. Robert Anton Wilson, in his book The Cosmic Trigger, wrote, Sufi historian Idris Shah traces the name of the Illuminati back to a verse in the Quran which mentions a shining star. And you can also see Patar and Judean Illuminator for ancient Egyptian and Judean connections to the Illuminati, and there are many. The term Illuminati, according to William T. Still in his book The New World Order, was used by one early writer, Menendez Pelayo, as early as 1492, and is attributable to a group known as the Alumbrados of Spain. The Alumbrados were said to receive secret knowledge from an unknown higher source, resulting in superior human intelligence. This group was condemned by an edict of the Grand Inquisition in 1623, and you all know what happens when that happens. People get barbecued, burned at the stake, tortured, put on the rack, bones broken in all the parts of their body, eyes burned out. Some writers claim that a group known as the Illuminated Ones was founded by Joachim of Floris in the 11th century and taught a primitive, supposedly Christian doctrine of poverty and equality. The 16th century saw the rise of a powerful society based upon a secret cult in the mountains of Afghanistan known as the Roshaniya, or Illuminated Ones. The earliest figure named in the history of the cult is one Bayezid Ansari of Afghanistan, whose family claimed descent from the Ansar, the helpers, who assisted Muhammad after his flight from Mecca nearly 1,400 years ago. And as a reward for this service, he stated his ancestors had been granted initiation into the mysteries of the Ishmaelite religion, the secret inner training which dated from Abraham's rebuilding of the temple at Mecca, the mystical Hiram. Not far from Peshawar, which is now in the northwest of Pakistan, Bayezid set up a small school where he carefully coached those who had been initiated by him in the knowledge of the supernatural that he claimed. A period of probation was expected from each candidate, during which he would go into periods of concealment or meditation, known as kilwat, or silence. During this time, he was to receive the illumination which was emanated from the Supreme Being, who desired a class of perfect men and women to carry out the organization and direction of the world. Merchants and soldiers contributed lavishly to the chief's upkeep and his most expensive military, political, and espionage system. At this stage of success, Bayezid now preached that there was no afterlife of the kind currently believed in. No reward, no punishment, only a spirit state which was completely different from earthly life. The spirits, if they belonged to the order, can continue to enjoy themselves and be earthly powers, acting through living members. Eat, drink, and be merry. Gain power, look after yourself. You have no allegiance except to the order, he told them, and all humanity which cannot identify itself by our secret sign is our lawful prey. Oh, how many times have I told you that? 40 years after the last religio-military leader of the Afghan Illuminated Ones died, a society of the same name, known as the Illuminati, came into being in Germany, formed, it is said, by one Adam Weishaupt. And if you look into the meaning of the word Adam and Weishaupt, you'll find that the symbology and the hidden code is everywhere, ladies and gentlemen. Weishaupt was said to have been a young professor of canon law at Ingolstadt University. Coincidences of date and beliefs connect these Bavarian Illuminati with the Afghan ones and also with other cults which called themselves Illumined. And for reference, you can look in Secret Societies by Archon Darul. Adam Weishaupt was a strange duck indeed, ladies and gentlemen. Rather than obey the dictates of the real and adjust himself to his reduced limits, late 18th century man took refuge among phantoms, satisfying his nostalgia with the marvels offered by imposters and necromancers. He fled matter and denied its existence, and a whole culture began collapsing. Adam Weishaupt adopted the teachings of radical French philosophers such as Jean-Jacques Rousseau, 1712 to 1778, and the anti-Christian doctrines of the Manicheans. He was indoctrinated in Egyptian occultism in 1771, by a merchant of unknown origin named Colmer, who was said to have traveled Europe in search of converts. Brilliant and well-trained by the Jesuits in the conspiratorial methods of access to power, young Weishaupt decided to organize a body of conspirators, determined to free the world from the Jesuitical rule of Rome and help humanity back to the pristine Christian faith of the Hermetic Martyrs. He is reputed to have been initiated by a German merchant named Colmer. He had spent many years in Egypt into a secret doctrine based on Manicheism. May Day of 1776, Weishaupt founded his own sect of the very Perfectibles, better known as the Illuminati, with 5 original members self-described as reformist libertarians, partisans of absolute equality. And that you can find in The Magic of Obelisks by Peter Tompkins. And while we're here on the subject of the training that Adam Weishaupt received from the Jesuits, ladies and gentlemen, it is incredible that people would believe that Adam Weishaupt, who was in fact a Jesuit priest, would divorce himself from his original order and form something called the Illuminati in order to get even with the Jesuits and to break their power. Because, ladies and gentlemen, the Jesuits came out of the Illuminati themselves. Remember the reference to the Alumbrados of Spain? Well, Ignatius Loyola, ladies and gentlemen, who was the first general of the Jesuits, sometimes referred to as the Black Pope, was a member, in fact, the leader of the Alumbrados in Spain. He was the leader of the Spanish Illuminati. He was arrested by the Inquisition. He was in the process of being interrogated just prior to the torture phase when he used his influence through his brothers of the Illuminati to gain an audience with the Pope. He entered the chambers of the Pope crawling on his hands and knees, ladies and gentlemen, and when he emerged, he was the general of a new order called the Society of Jesus, and some say had as much or more power than the Pope, or as the Pope, as the case may be. And that was the birth of the society known as the Jesuits. You can see them practicing their subversion around the world now as they teach Marxist liberation theology in third world nations. And so it goes on and on and on. So those of you who believe that Adam Weishaupt began his branch of the Bavarian Illuminati to get even with the Jesuits, you still haven't done all the research that you need to do, ladies and gentlemen, because that is not the case. Never was the case, never could be the case, for they are the same order. Adam Weishaupt, now I'm continuing with Arshan's expose. Adam Weishaupt, professor of canon law at the University of Ingolstadt, conceived the idea of founding an order which, by mutual helpfulness, counsel and philosophic discussions, would increase morality and virtue, lay the foundation for the reformation of the world, and oppose the progress of evil, all of which objectives were expressed in the name Order of Perfectibilists, or Perfectionists, which was soon changed to Illuminati, which is best translated as intellectually inspired. Modesty and humility seems to have been no trait of Weishaupt, for he was one of the first to attempt to fly with little knowledge of human aerodynamics. His ambition outweighed his judgment. His ideals were too refined for a rude world. Like many other promoters, Weishaupt sought the aid of Freemasonry to give his machine both propulsion and ballast. And apparently he didn't know that at the highest levels of Freemasonry was already installed the Knights Templar, fully in control of that branch of the Illuminati. But it dragged Freemasonry down without helping Illuminism very much, and only because Weishaupt had a big mouth. One of the tenets of the order is you never admit its existence. And that's the first thing that he did. You see, people point to the Bavarian Illuminati as being the only branch that ever existed. Not true, ladies and gentlemen. It's the only branch whose leader was foolish enough to allow the public to know that it existed. And it wouldn't surprise me at all to find that the Illuminati in itself had been a major movement in the destruction of Weishaupt's order. Weishaupt, they say, was too shrewd and subtle for his own good, though such qualities gave him headway for a time. Although he formerly belonged to the Jesuits, he secured admission to a lodge of Freemasonry in 1777. Ironically, that was named the Lodge of Caution. We are not informed as to just how Weishaupt became associated with Adolf Franz Friedrich Ludwig Baron von Nigg, for the latter lived in North Germany, was of the nobility, and after his initiation in 1773, showed very little interest in Freemasonry. But noblemen were fond were found in abundance in the most fraudulent orders in Germany. Claiming some Masonic connections, Weishaupt in 1780 dispatched the Marquis de Costanzo to propagate Illuminism in the North, and Nigi probably then first showed interest in the society. He became more and more enthusiastic as the plan was revealed to him, and in 1781 accepted the invitation to visit Bavaria and receive full access to all of Weishaupt's materials. Nigi not only completed the scale of degrees, ladies and gentlemen, but became a proponent of them, bringing to his aid the assistance of Johann J.C. Bode, a prominent German Freemason. The order was at first very popular and attracted, it is said, some of the best men in Germany and also some of the worst. It had 2,000 names on its rolls and spread to France, Belgium, Holland, Denmark, Sweden, Poland, Hungary, and Italy. And you can find that referenced in Coyle's Masonic Encyclopedia, 1961, by Henry Wilson Coyle. In Peter Tompkins' The Magic of Obelisks, we find, unable in Catholic Bavaria to achieve this utopian goal by direct means, Weishaupt determined to work from within an existing organization, the Masonic Order. And by 1779, there were 54 members of the Illuminati, mostly young noblemen and clergymen, established in four Bavarian cities, and thereafter, with the help of a Masonic bookseller, Johann Bode, the order branched out through southern Germany and Australia. Austria. That's Germany and Austria. And down into France and northern Italy. Intellectuals such as Goethe, Schiller, Mozart, and Herder were attracted and actually were members. In Coyle's Masonic Encyclopedia, again, Nigi especially was a highly religious and intellectual man and would have had nothing to do with that or any other order which was anti-Christian, yet the vicious attacks and accusations by Barul and Robison had great influence. And it was even charged that the Illuminati were themselves agents of the Jesuits. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is closer to the truth than you will ever know, though the latter were opposing it in their usual secret manner. The Illuminati were extremely secretive, even identifying themselves in their chapters by assumed classical names. For examples, Weishaupt was Spartacus, Nigi was Philo, Ingolstadt, the headquarters, was Eleusis, Austria was Egypt, etc., and dates were given in a sort of cryptography. In William T. Still's New World Order, he says that Thomas Jefferson strenuously defended the Illuminati and described Weishaupt as an enthusiastic philanthropist, and that's absolutely true, ladies and gentlemen. Thomas Jefferson himself was a member, which is not widely known. As Weishaupt lived under the tyranny of a despot and priests, he knew that caution was necessary, even in spreading information and the principles of pure morality. This has given an air of mystery to his views, was the foundation of his banishment. If Weishaupt had written here, where no secrecy is necessary in our endeavors to render men wise and virtuous, he would not have thought of any secret machinery for the purpose. That is an exact quote from Thomas Jefferson. The Illuminati were finally beset by both internal and external disorders, for Weishaupt found fault with some of Nigi's ritualistic work and peremptorily ordered it changed, whereupon Nigi became disgusted and resigned in 1784. Second, 1784, many Illuminati being imprisoned and some, including Weishaupt, being forced to flee the country. The Jesuits were not opposed to the Illuminati, ladies and gentlemen. They were the Illuminati. They were opposed to the mess that Weishaupt was making of the name of the order and his public exposition that the Illuminati not only existed, but had plans to remake the world. This made them very angry, for the first tenet of the Illuminati is to always remain in the background, behind the veil, never calling attention to themselves, never admitting the existence of the order, ever. And they are all under an oath, a blood oath, where they consent that if they break their vows of secrets or secrecy, they will be murdered in a most terrible manner. Many Illuminati were forced to flee the country. And of course, found other orders, went into those orders, and eventually made themselves ready and known, and climbed up the pyramidal structure of initiation to once again take their place, and this time hold their tongue. Though the first edict had been obeyed, it was repeated in March and August 1785. Not only Illuminism, but Freemasonry was exterminated in Bavaria, and neither ever recovered its former position in that country to this day. The Illuminati seemed to have completely disappeared everywhere by the end of the 18th century, and that is the way that they had always existed, and that is the way that they preferred it. That is their law, in fact, and was a normal consequence of watching what happened to Adam Weishaupt. The suppression of the Illuminati of Bavaria in 1785 created a tremendous furor whose echoes reached as far as New England, drawing George Washington out in support of the suspect American Freemasons. Of course, he was one. In fact, the Illuminati proved to be the unwilling occasion for the birth of modern conspiracy theory. Wildly exaggerated accounts of their supposed wickedness and of the imminent peril which they represented for society were published in a great epidemic of pamphlets. Their secrecy, their insistence on recruitment of important civil servants, their concealment of the true aims of the society from all but a few highly placed initiates, combined to make them into the boogeymen not only of the German conservatives, but of a wider European public, and for good reason. 4 years later, when the French Revolution broke out, the mythical beliefs about the Illuminati of Bavaria were incorporated in a vaster and even wilder conspiracy theory, which found room also for the Templars. And folks, that was a quote from The Murdered Magicians, written by Peter Partner, somebody who did not do his research very well. Or maybe he did it only too well and did what was expected of him under the circumstances. What is today called the conspiracy theory was born in the flood tide of books, pamphlets, and articles denouncing the Illuminati and linking them to an ever-lengthening list of other supposed plotters. The scope of the accusations is reflected in the title of one anti-Illuminati book published in 1797, entitled Proofs of a Conspiracy Against All the Religions and Governments of Europe, carried out in the secret meetings of Freemasons, Illuminati, and reading societies, collected from good authorities. The 170-year-old Proofs of a Conspiracy was reissued in 1967 by the John Birch Society, which apparently considered the Illuminati a clear and present danger. And that's from Ancient Wisdom and Secret Sects. And you can obtain Proofs of a Conspiracy by Robeson and read it for yourself. He quotes directly from the Freemasonic and Illuminati publications like I do, and convicted them in their own words, ladies and gentlemen. He didn't make any of it up, and it's all true. Don't go away. I'll be right back. I need to get a little drink of water. Thank you. One of the things that you'll notice when you research the Illuminati and the secret orders, when you're reading the books of others who have written about these orders and these people, is that they don't take them seriously at all. They refer to their rites of initiation and their ceremonies as mumbo jumbo and the like. In fact, it is not. It is a very, very complicated secret religion based upon the journey of the soul. And it is the same religion that has existed throughout the history of humanity, practiced in the secret orders of all of the major societies of the world, in particular the upper or nobility class, the people who had knowledge and educations and ruled the countries of the world. And here's an example from Peter Partner in The Murdered Magicians. He's also the one who talks quite elaborately about conspiracy theories. The aristocratic mumbo-jumbo of the Templar lodges pandered to the confused conservatism of the German nobles and had a great deal in common with the mumbo-jumbo of the Rosicrucians, to whose ideas the Illuminati were absolutely opposed. The Bavarian Illuminati were an austere emanation of the spirit of the German professorate, inspired by a consciously bourgeois program, irreligious and radical. And here you can see that Peter Partner did not take Adam Weishaupt seriously either, who said that his order would exist under many different names and occupations, always appearing to oppose each other. But at the highest levels of these orders, they were of the same body and of the same mind. The ceremonies of the Illuminati were divided into three principal classes, and those into degrees as follows, as far as we have been able to determine. But remember, this is a secret order. There could be many, many more, and probably are. But this is what we were able to discover. It's what Arshan discovered. Anybody who researches the Illuminati will find this same thing. The first degree was the nursery, preparatory literary essay, novitiate, Minerval, Minor Illuminatus, and Magistratus are the degrees in the nursery. There are five degrees. And in the second class, called Symbolic Freemasonry, there are four degrees. The Apprentice, the Fellow Craft, the Master Mason, and A, Scots Major Illuminatus, and B, Scots Illuminatus Dirigens, or Directory. And in the third class, called the Mysteries, there are two degrees divided into sections. The first degree is the Lesser, with holding A, Presbyter, Priest, or Epopt, B, Prince, or Regent, and the second degree is the Greater, holding the Magus, or B, the Rex, or King. Some of these latter degrees were never completed, they say. However, when I prowl the internet and I find people signing their name with Fraternitas Rex Mundi, ladies and gentlemen, I know that that is not a true statement. And that's from Coyle's Masonic Encyclopedia, by the way, if you'd like to look that up for yourself. Here is something that was sent to Arshand by Jeff Jorzak. And he says, status as a Mason was not required for initiation into the Order of Illuminati, since the 4th, 5th, and 6th degrees of Weishaupt and Baron von Nogi's system practically duplicated the 3 degrees of symbolic Freemasonry. Although Nogi claimed to have a system of 10 degrees, the last two appear never to have been fully worked up. Again, that's as far as we're able to find. In The Gods of Eden by William Bramley, which is questionable, highly questionable, any of the stuff that you read in there, although he did do some legitimate research into the secret societies, he claims that all of the secret societies are headed and guided by extraterrestrials from some other planet, and ladies and gentlemen, that just flat ain't true. But William Bramley says The Gods of Eden, openly political and anti-monarchical, Weishaupt's Illuminati formed another channel of higher degrees for Freemasons to graduate into after completing the blue degrees. Weishaupt's Illuminati had its own hidden master known as the Ancient Scott Superior. And you can find a link right to that place, ladies and gentlemen, on my website. And I don't mean William Bramley's Gods of Eden, I mean the Ancient Scott Superior. According to Archon Darul in Secret Societies, in the lower ranks, the nursery, the member was very much in the dark as to the way in which the order was run and how it should accomplish its design of freeing the world. As he progressed, however, he found that a part of his service to the society was to gain financial and social power and to place them at the disposal of the group. He was expected to be a diligent Mason and to try to gain control over Masonic funds. It was not until the 10th rite of promotion had been completed that the member was given, with the grade of priest, certain definite knowledge. This included the fact that the Illuminati were proposing to destroy princes and prelates throughout the world and were to remove forever the feeling of local nationality from the minds of men. The ways in which this was to be done involved infiltrating high positions in education, administration, and the press. The very highest degrees showed that the rationalism and materialism of the thinkers who developed it were determined to stamp out all beliefs in religion, God, and any faith in a deity. The initiate was told were humans' inventions and had no real meaning. Subsequently, this was developed further, and the member who arrived at the highest position, that of Rex King, or King of the World, Rex Mundi, learned that he was now equal to a king and that all men were capable of equal advancement, hence the need for kings over ordinary mortals was an illusion. And folks, what I just read to you right there, I mean, if you look around at today, if you can't see the hand of the Illuminati at work, then you can't see. We'll follow the threads of conspiracy, if you will. After their recent exposures in Bavaria, the Illuminati had been driven even further underground, taking on a variety of names, such as the French Revolutionary Club. And as radicals flocked into these new varieties of Illuminism, a larger meeting hall was needed. The Hall of the Jacobins Convent was leased, and it was from this hall that they eventually derived their new name, the Jacobin Club. And the Jacobin Club was very active in the early days of the United States of America. The Jacobin Club met in secret and eventually boasted of having some of the best educated and the most influential men in France among its 1,300 members. The Jacobins vowed to destroy the monarchy as well as other existing institutions and sought to establish what they called a new world order, or universal republic. That's what's coming, and these are the people who are bringing it. And they did destroy the monarchy, ladies and gentlemen. And they are at work in England right now to destroy that monarchy. And by golly, it won't be long until the House of Windsor falls. They can't even any longer handle their own family, much less a nation. And the Illuminati, in control of the press and the other institutions, are hammering at them constantly, all the time. And the people... well, the people love their monarch, they say, but they hate the monarchy. How about that? The famous magician and occultist Cagliostro was initiated into the Illuminati in 1783. Many years later, he told Catholic priests about his initiation. The initiation took place in an underground room near Frankfurt, Germany. An iron box filled with papers was opened. The introducers took from it a manuscript book, which on the first page read, "We, Grand Masters of the Templars," then followed a form of oath traced in blood. The book stated that Illuminism was a conspiracy directed against thrones and altars, and that the first blows were to attain France, and that after the fall of the French monarchy, Rome must be attacked. By March 1789, the 266 lodges controlled by the French Grand Orient were all Illuminized, without knowing it, for the Freemasons in general were not told the name of the sect that brought them these mysteries and only a very small number were really initiated into the secret, those at the highest of the pyramidal structure of initiation. And in the following month, the revolution broke out. That from Nesta H. Webster, Secret Societies and Subversive Movements. Cagliostro was the agent of the Templars and therefore wrote to the Freemasons of London that the time had come to begin the work of rebuilding the Temple of the Eternal. He had introduced into Masonry a new rite called the Egyptian and endeavored to resuscitate the mysterious worship of Isis. The three letters I, P, D on his seal were the initials of the word Lilia Pedibus Destru, tread underfoot the lilies. And of course, the lilies were the representation of France. And a Masonic medal of the 16th or 17th century has upon it a sword cutting off the stalk of a lily, and the words Talum Debet Altio Messum. And that translates, such harvest revenge will give, and you can find that in Morals and Dogma by General Albert Pike. In The Assassins, Holy Killers of Islam by Edward Berman, I quote, in his memoirs, Pour Survivre à l'Histoire du Jacobinisme, published in three volumes from 1797 to 1798, Barul, a Jesuit scholar, derived all evils from the Mani and the Mainichians and demonstrated the existence of a continuous historical conspiracy. From Peter Partner and the Murdered Magicians, the Templars and their Myth, in the minds of Barul and Cadet de Gassicourt, Le Tombeau de Jacques de Molay, there was an invincible belief in a continuous historical conspiracy through which anarchist beliefs had passed from the medieval heretics in the West and the assassins in the East to the Templars, and thence through the four Templar lodges which were set up after the death of Jacques de Molay, that's Jacques de Molay, in 1314. And it is absolutely true. My research has not only found that to be true, but I have traced it from the beginning of the written and oral history of the human race right up to the present time, and I have revealed that history and that research to you on this broadcast, giving you sources and documentation for every single bit of it, which many of you have duplicated the research now and have found that every single word of it is true. Edward Berman in The Assassins, Holy Killers of Islam, said, all revolutionaries and murderers since then had been part of a single Templar society, including Cromwell, the murderer of Henry IV of France, conspirators in Portugal, Brazil, and Sweden, and of course, Robespierre and Danton. David Conway in Ritual Magic said, Elvis Levi claimed that the French Revolution represented the Templars' revenge for the persecution they had suffered in the 13th century. And that also is true, ladies and gentlemen. A lodge inaugurated under the auspices of Rousseau, the fanatic of Geneva, became the center of the revolutionary movement in France, and a prince of the blood royal went thither to swear the destruction of the successors of Philippe le Bel on the tomb Jacques de Molay. The registers of the Order of Templars attest that the regent, the Duc d'Orléans, was Grand Master of that formidable secret society, and that his successors were the Duc de Maine, the Prince of Bourbon-Condé, and the Duc de Crosse-Brissas. It was impossible to unfold to the people the conspiracy of the Templars against the thrones and the tiara, for to do so would have been to initiate the multitude into the secrets of the masters and to have uplifted the veil of Isis. When Louis XVI was executed, half the work was done, and thenceforth the army of the Temple was to direct all its efforts against the Pope. You'll find that written by General Albert Pike in Morals and Dogma, and he should know, because he were one, as Pogo would say. In the spring and summer of 1789, an artificial shortage of grain was created by illuminist manipulations of the grain market. This produced a famine so intense that it brought the nation to the edge of revolt. One of the leading figures in this scheme was the Duc d'Orléans, the Grand Master of the Grand Orient Lodges. The Illuminists claimed that their revolution would be for the benefit of the bourgeoisie with the people as instruments, but in reality the conspirators held up the food supplies and blocked all reforms in the National Assembly to exacerbate the situation, and the populace starved. By July 14th, the Bastille was stormed, from which a grand total of only 7 prisoners were liberated, because that's all there was in there. Even French historians now acknowledge that the purpose of the revolutionaries was not to destroy the Bastille or liberate the prisoners, but to steal arms and gunpowder. And thus armed, on July 22nd, 1789, the Jacobins set into motion one of the most elaborately timed revolutionary exercises ever attempted, and it would later be known as the Great Fear or the Great Terror. A panic was created simultaneously around the nation of France. Horsemen rode from town to town, telling the citizens that brigands were approaching and that everyone should take up arms. Citizens were instructed that the conspirators were being harbored in the larger estates, the chateau, and that by edict of the king, all should be torched. The people, obedient to their monarch, complied. Soon the flames of destruction were soon burning out of control. Anarchy continued to grow as citizens began raiding and pillaging, and not only for food. With the overthrow of the monarchy in 1792, from the 10th of August onwards, we find the tricolor replaced by the red flag of the social revolution, whilst the cry of Vive Notre Roi d'Orléans gives way to the Masonic watchword Liberty, Equality, Fraternity. Terror was rampant in the streets of Paris. In November 1793, a campaign against religion was inaugurated by a massacre of the priests all over France. In the cemeteries, the cherished motto of the Illuminati, Death is an Eternal Sleep, was posted by the Order of the Illuminatus, Anaxagoras, Chaumet. In the churches of Paris, feasts of reason were celebrated, where women of easy morals were enthroned as goddesses. These were also known as Exoterian, and were modeled on Weishaupt's plan to honor the God of Love. In 1791, after returning to the United States from a 3-year stint as minister to France, Thomas Jefferson described the carnage as so beautiful a revolution, and stated that he hoped it would sweep the world. He claimed to believe that most Frenchmen were Jacobins. Their excesses, if one called them such, reflected that national will. By 1793, much of France lay in ruin. Industries were decimated, libraries burned, the bourgeoisie all but wiped out. Even the great chemist Lavoisier had been guillotined on the excuse that the Republic has no need of chemists. The fact is, every priest, every educated man, every professor, every scientist in France was guillotined. And that's what they're going to do when they get this new world order for all of you. Stupid, stupid intellectuals who think that you're somehow going to be elevated to some superior position in the new society. What fools you are. You have not studied the history of these people. And so, those who will not study history are doomed to repeat it. Toward the end of 1793, the new Revolutionary Republic found itself faced with hundreds of thousands of working men for whom it could not find employment. The revolutionary leaders embarked upon a fearful new project that was to be copied by tyrants ever after, called population control or depopulation. You ever heard of that before, folks? Read Global 2000, the president's report on population. The idea was to reduce France's population of 25 million down to either 8 or 16 million, depending upon which source you believe. Maximilien Robespierre believed depopulation to be indispensable. The system of the terror was thus the answer to the problem of unemployment. Unemployment brought about on a vast scale by the destruction of the luxury trades. And that gave them an excuse to kill all these people because they were what were known as useless eaters. Heard that term before? In France, members of the revolutionary committees in charge of the extermination toiled literally day and night over maps, calculating just how many heads must be sacrificed in each town. Fearful, revolutionary tribunals tried to determine who would be killed, and a never-ending stream of victims marched to a variety of deaths. In Nantes, 500 children were killed in one butchery, and 144 poor women who sewed shirts for the army were thrown into the river. Estimates of the final death toll at the time ran around 300,000. Thomas Jefferson said, quote, "I have seen half the earth desolated. Were there but an Adam and Eve left in every country and left free, it would be better than it now is. The liberty of the whole earth was depending on the issue of the contest," end quote. And Thomas Jefferson, ladies and gentlemen, was most definitely a member of the Illuminati. Good night, folks, and God bless you all.